Welcome to the Build Up on Balls.ie in association with Ladbrokes. Please bet responsibly. Visit dunlewy.net for further information.
Hello and welcome along to the Build Up on Balls.ie in association with Ladbrokes, our weekly podcast where we get you hyped for the sporting weekend. And Mick, I've been looking at these election slogans, right? Obviously the election's been called.
Okay.
And Fianna Fáil's an Ireland to look forward, or sorry, an Ireland for all. Fine Gael, a future to look forward to. They're a load of crap.
Yeah.
Why didn't they go with my slogan?
Which is?
8th of February, the biggest sporting day of the year.
Well,
the biggest sporting weekend.
Yeah, that's what, yeah, so that would be what you will be calling it come 8th and 9th of February.
Yes.
As you will every week.
But this one, if you count politics as a sport, and then you've got Ireland against Wales, you've got the massive clash of Dublin against Monaghan, you've got a local derby in Waterford against Wexford, and Armagh are playing somebody, I can't quite remember who, I think it's Kildare, which is a lovely colour contrast when you think about it. So it is a massive sport weekend.
It's the Kieran McGeady derby, if that's the case.
Exactly.
Like, yeah. Right. So, yeah, okay, yeah. So, and look, I mean, there's no greater sport, there's no greater blood sport than Irish politics, you know, and come the finishing line on Saturday. And also, you have to remember as well, it is the weekend. It's not just the day. Sunday's a better day than Saturday. The day after the election is the greatest day of all. And, you know, we've probably got more Six Nations. We'll definitely have more National League. There's going to be a lot going on all weekend. It is the biggest sporting weekend of the year.
Yeah, there you go. And like,
why, maybe that's for people who are promoting the election rather than promoting their individual parties, though.
Yeah, it is Armagh against Kildare. I'm just thinking, like, why is Leo Varadkar scheduled this for a Saturday when there's all this sport on?
Yeah.
And my thinking on it is he looking at it going, right, you've got Monaghan away down in Croke Park. If a few Monaghan people are gone and they don't get to vote, Heather Humphreys is fairly sure of her seat up there. That's grand. You've got Wexford going away to Waterford. One, not a long journey. And two, even if some of the Wexford lads don't make it back or they're too busy, Paul Keogh probably going to get a seat. So maybe he's looking ahead that way. Maybe he looked at the GA, the Allianz League fixtures for the Saturday and went, actually, do you know what? This could scupper the rest of the parties more than it'll scupper us.
Yeah, they are looking for a second seat in Wexford, actually. Yeah, they've got certain issues down there that we're not going to go into now. But yeah, I'd imagine all these things were taken into account. My thing would be that a lot of people are going to come from a long way for the rugby game. And it's like, everyone's like, you could vote. You could get out there at 7 in the morning and vote. And it's like, yeah, Grant, you could. But are you going to? You know, like, I mean, fair enough, like, it's up to individuals, but ultimately they want turnout to be low. But then again, students are going to be home.
100%. I think every election should be on a Saturday. One, because if you're a student, or as someone who votes at home and has lived and worked either away in college or up in Dublin all the time, it's such a nuisance having an election that's on a weekday. So I 100% think that should be just a given thing. But more importantly, it screws over the teachers because they don't get a day off.
Yeah. But what about the poor students?
Well,
they love days off.
Yeah, when I was...
It's the best thing in the world when your school closed down for the election.
All you 10, 11-year-olds right now, you remember this in six years' time or 7 years' time when you're going out to vote. You'd be like, you are the lads that didn't give us that day off 8 years ago. So
all elections should be on Saturdays, but most Saturdays won't have, what is it, 135,000 people going to sporting events in Dublin.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah.
But anyway, we must get on with the show because let's not worry about that just yet, because this weekend is the biggest sporting weekend of the year so far, mate.
Hey.
We've got the final round of the Champions Cup games. We've got Liverpool against Man United.
Yeah.
We've got the All-Ireland Club Finals. We've got the NFL, I'm going to call them semi-finals.
The
I don't
conference
care.
conference championships.
Yep, I'm going to...
Jesus, Mark.
It really is.
You're actually right.
And we've got golf seasons back up and running. We've got
we've been talking
Lowry's
about that,
out,
the big shout, yeah.
Yeah, Shane Lowry's out. He's defending his Abu Dhabi Open. Here's a question for you.
Yes.
Did you know, a fact really, did you know that the people in Dubai don't watch the Flintstones? Nobody in Dubai watches the Flintstones. Did you know that?
Go on, why?
They don't, but the people in Abu Dhabi do. And on that bombshell, we've also...
Oh, God, I'm so sorry. Kevin Doyle, Stephen Ferris, these are going to be good. If you just skip through this part, you'll be fine.
There's lots coming up at the show. We'll be talking to Kevin Doyle and Stephen Ferris. As you mentioned, we'll have our big shout. We'll be getting hype for the club finals this weekend with Morris Brosnan coming into studio. He'll also stick around when we preview the conference finals in the NFL. And we've got
Conference championships.
You see, I just want to call them the semi-finals. I used to call them the semi-finals, ironically, and now I can't remember what that is. something else is. The quarterfinals were great last weekend. We'll have the semifinals coming up. And we've got a brand new segment debuting this week. Mick, can you give me a new segment gong? I know you don't have one prepared. I put it in the spot. Just hit
something.
It's
still dangerous for Dublin pedestrians.
Sorry, is that man slips on ice?
It's the best I could do in short notice, Mark.
Did you even know that was going to come up?
No.
It's still dangerous for Dublin pedestrians.
I think that's a great gong.
That's a great gong.
Yeah, that's because our official build-up gong then.
Yeah, it's probably, when you hear about this new segment, it's probably how it's going to go for myself and Mick. It's very similar to the man slipping on ice. It's a new charity bet that we're doing with Ladbrokes every week where we need your help, right? We're going to start off with 10 euro. Ladbrokes has given us 10 euro. We're going to try and build it up to 1,000 euro for charity. And we're going to do it by putting a bet on a sure thing every weekend. Something that's odds between 1 to 5 and 1 to 2, say, right?
Yeah.
But we want you, the listener.
Well, we need you, the listener, yeah, to be honest, because you can't be trusting me or you to do this. Like.
Exactly, because us trying to do this would sound very much like, Mick, hit me.
It's still dangerous for Dublin pedestrians.
Exactly. So, what we're going to do is, we're going to pick a
That's
couple
the
of
amplified bit at the end where you hear him saying, "Oh shit!"
So
it's still dangerous for Dublin pedestrians.
So hold yourself together, man. We're going to pick a couple. We're going to put down a couple of suggestions. We're going to put them up on site. You'll see it at the bottom of our. You'll see it on site. We need you to vote. So we'll run the poll for a few days after the podcast goes live. And then come the weekend, whatever is the most popular, we're going to put the 10 euro onto that. And obviously, if whatever we win, we'll then put that onto the bet next week. So as I said, we need your help. We'll be talking about that later on in the show. We'll be coming up with our selections for this week. But before that, let's chat to Kevin Doyle about this weekend's football. Kevin, before we get into our chat this week, I think we have to take a moment to reflect on an outstanding call you made last week. Southampton, off the back of a 9-0 defeat to Leicester, you predicted that they'd go away to Leicester and beat them. They just went and did that. Like, have you been parading around the house at home as proud as possible?
I didn't put any money on it. Myself, lads. Terrible, isn't it? What a waste.
That was the way.
I can't pat myself back because I'm getting plenty wrong. Yeah, you know what? It was bound to happen, wasn't it?
Yeah,
should have backed them back straight after that game when they got beat 9-0 in their turn one, they'd win. I think it was with them playing quite well as well. As I think I said, there's not much between them on paper when you look at their squads and what's been spent. But when you see the differences in the league table and the points they've had, but in the last 6 weeks, Southampton have been as good as anyone's.
I was about to say,
they deserve that win.
With Leicester, are you beginning to worry for them a little bit? Are they faltering a little? Like, the results have been a bit indifferent recently. They've had a couple of good wins, but then obviously they played the likes of Liverpool and Man City, suffered defeat. And I just wonder, something, you know, like, are they going to be able to keep this up for the whole season? Has been the big question, and now are the cracks starting to appear, maybe?
Yeah, and I just think they're coming back to more where they are, the squad and the team. I still think, you know, they'll... Fantastic achievement if they stay in the top four. It'll be away from where they were a few weeks ago. You know, they were the only ones close to challenging Liverpool. But no, if they can stay in that top four, which I think they will, there's a good gap there for them. I think that's a fantastic achievement. I wouldn't say it's a disappointment for them or dropping off. I think it's still ahead of, I suppose, the sum of their parts. It'll be a really good season. So they don't have the strong squad in the league. They don't have they're probably a mid-table strength squad. They don't have strength and depth, so it's expected that they're going to drop off around now when the games are coming thick and fast. Players tired, probably as well enjoying where they are in the league and maybe had a good Christmas somewhere. So it's expected to see their form drop off a bit.
The other team that's in flying form at the minute, you mentioned Southampton, but like Watford are unbelievable since Nigel Pearson's come in. And it's one of those things, probably a lot of us maybe looked at Pearson coming in and gone, just, you know, where are they going with this? You see with David Moyes as well, going back to West Ham, when you're replacing someone like Pellegrini, who had a Premier League title to his name. But like, is there sometimes, can we underrate the sort of old school manager? It's almost come back to that Sam Allardyce thing of, you know, if my name was Sam Allardyce, I'd imagine it was Real Madrid or something you mentioned. But like, that these lads, they can get results, that we don't always have to look to sort of the new thing or the new, you know, like Marco Silva, for instance, is an example that springs to mind, that was the kind of the flavour of the month back when he was wanted by Watford, wanted by Everton. There were a good few teams in after him.
Yeah, I don't know. Nigel Pearson, I never felt that he was old school, you know. I didn't know where he disappeared in the last few years, because when you think about it, he was the one, I know he didn't manage Leicester to a league title, but he was the one who took Leicester from, they were bottom of the league. He got them promoted, first of all, but they were bottom of the league, I think, at Christmas, and they're one of the first teams to get out of it, being bottom of the league. They were tailed off, and he got them up. He kept them up, did really well, and he got sacked right at the start pre-season. He got sacked when Ranieri took over then. So, like, he obviously put some things in place there that helped them win the league the following season. You know, and he's doing him Watford regarding getting from bottom position in the league. You would have said in the start of December, they're gone. It's finally their time. You know, they've changed their manager so many times. Obviously, it couldn't be happening again. But in fairness to him, I don't know. I don't look at him. Other people might look at him as old school. I don't. I always sort of quite enjoyed his interviews and things like that. He was always very, you know, you think you're going to get something else out of him, and then you hear him talk. He's very articulate, sights, and yeah, I don't know. I just, I've always enjoyed listening to him. When he got the job, I was thinking, where's he been, actually? I thought he'd have had a few more jobs in the last few years, considering what he did do with Leicester.
Belgium or something?
I think it was, he was somewhere in Belgium, maybe Ghent or somewhere. But you know what? Maybe the Watford players, they've had a lot of, you know, of the same. Flores was back twice, but I suppose he's a total change to what they had. It's their first English manager, I'd imagine. Well, not that that makes a difference, but something different to what they've had, maybe. They always, anyway, they get a boost from a new manager. They're so used to a change there because they always work for them. So, you know, you should never write them off. David Moyes is more of a strange one for me. That one, you know, I could not see that coming. And he doesn't inspire me like Nigel Pearson does. And things like that. And I was a Man United fan, so after listening to him a lot as Man United manager, I don't know. I don't know whether you know, I'm sure you keep them up and all that, but it's just weird that they've come back to him at this stage.
Yeah, just on the other side of, like, the going back to Pearson for a second, like, it's funny. I was reading a piece the other day about how Watford are actually a club very suited to changing managers, in that it's sort of basically like almost the first team coach that comes in, and it's a new shape for the players and picks the team and everything like that, and the rest of the club is run around, you know, by everybody else, almost the more kind of like stable kind of people that are in charge. Whereas if you look at a club like Bournemouth, who are like really on a slide at the moment, they can't just go out and, not that they should, but not, they can't just go out and sack Eddie Howe and bring in somebody to replace it, because Eddie Howe basically runs the entire football club. You know, it's a very kind of a different mentality. I'm sure you've been kind of at clubs that did it in both ways. Do you feel that as a player? Like, I mean, do you kind of know the difference between this manager is just a custodian versus this guy is, you know, running?
Yeah, you know, when I was at Wolves, that was what they were trying to transition to. When they sacked Mick McCarthy, they were going from that model of Mick was basically in control of the whole club, had a lot of power over everything too. They were trying to change it to the model like sort of Watford, I suppose, where there's the director of football. There's, you know, it was the case, you know, where managers get sacked, the physio goes, the fitness coach goes, everyone goes with the manager, whereas they were trying to transition, which is understandable, you know, when you're changing your manager, you don't have to change all the staff and all the behind-the-scenes people. You want to just change the coach, move on. And you can see that in the modern way. That's the way it should be. Managers change so much. If you're to be changing everyone, all, you know, probably 10, 12 staff every time, it's going to cost you a fortune. It's a big upheaval at a club. They want to keep it all sort of the same and just change a head coach. I felt as a player, a manager who was in charge of everything got more out of me because he felt more like he was the boss. When the manager was just there as, you know, ships in the night, and everyone else kept their job, but he went, you felt it was just a case of waiting for the day when he's going to get the bullet. It was easier for a club to fire him than give him a chance to turn things around. So as a player, you sort of felt less responsibility, I think, than you do when a manager is, you know, is the boss, and you don't go against anything. The manager decides everything. Their players find, you know, what time you're here, they're everywhere. He is the one overall leader, sort of thing, and like a dictator. But it's probably, you know, I felt it was the best for me to get the best out of me when it was like that.
On that topic as well of like new managers coming in, I just was interested in what Jose Mourinho was saying after the Liverpool game, where he was talking about the fact that they've had Klopp has had, you know, 5 years at the club to get them physically to the point where they're able to do what he wants them to do. Now, yeah. Mourinho, I don't know what he needs to do physically because teams tend to not run an awful lot compared to other teams anyway, so I don't know how long it takes for teams to get ready for that. But is that something that you've noticed even when you were a player that, you know, forever about tactically and the different kind of intricacies of a manager, but just pure physical training and the fitness that maybe you're there for, you know, you've got a guy for 8 months, a year that's doing one thing and then all of a sudden it just changes up completely and you're doing a different type of training?
Yeah, I've had that with different managers. You know, some managers will come in and change it totally. You're not fit enough. No, I remember, I think it was Dean Saunders at Wolves, you are not fit enough. And, you know, middle of the season, we went from one training regime to everyone running, everyone, you know, absolutely bursting their balls and barely monitoring on different things like that, you know, real, which is not probably the way to do it either. You can't just transition from one to the other overnight and, you know, that you have to build slowly into something when you're dealing with an animal or a body or whatever, you have to condition it to get to that fitness level. So, yeah, I remember thinking it was crazy at the time, that one. But, yeah, different managers, different theories. Jose Mourinho's one, you know, he's usually better to start, to be honest with you. I don't know what he's on about saying. Yeah. Klopp's got 5 years. He's messed it up after year three, wherever he's been. It's usually the first year or two he gets his impact and then he's gone. So, yeah, managers have different theories on, you know, some will say you get your fitness with the ball and you do all your run with the ball and you never do a run. Other managers I've had where you run at the end of every training session early in the week, or, you know, you'll do all your running that fitness wise without the ball, and then when the ball is just for tactics, shape, very little used as a fitness. Other managers, it'll be all 5-a-side, sharp shooting, really quick, intense training, but everything's with ball. And it's, I don't know, it's old school or new school, it's just which now, it changes so much. One is the way forward, and one, the other one's the way forward. It changes every couple of years. Hot bats 1 year, cold bats next year. You know, stuff changes all the time. What's involved, what team is doing well, and managers and staff pick up on what other clubs are doing and they copy that. And everyone's always searching, looking for an edge, for something different. You know, there's never usually one right way or wrong way. It's a sort of a blend of everything, I think. I've been a footballer in a day to day. You always loved the manager who decided everything with the ball was the way you should do it.
Yeah, exactly.
You've been a lazy fecker. You don't want to be running around after every training session. But you know what? You have to run. You cannot play. You can't play football without running. And the fitter teams are usually the better teams. And it's simple thing to be fitter, to be better. But it's a fine art between being fit and being overfit, you know, going the other way and training too hard and not having the energy then on the weekend or whenever your game is to be ready for a game. I've seen the opposite where you train too hard. You do too much the day or two before a game, and no matter what, it kills you. If you're wrecked, if you're tired, you put too much in your legs on a Friday, Thursday or Friday in thinking you're preparing well, thinking you're doing everything right and not leaving a stone unturned, but then you've left your legs on the training ground and you don't have it on a Saturday on a pitch, and that's when you see teams look lethargic and you think, oh, they're late to every ball. You know, what's wrong with them today? And a lot of the case, it's a simple thing of a manager, you know, trying to do everything on a Thursday and Friday, trying to get every set piece in, every tactical situation in, and overtraining, overthinking it without thinking of what he's after doing to the player's legs. So find the best know-how to do it. Like Sir Alex Ferguson, I think the players who worked under him, fantastic at judging when players should train or not train, when should they have days off or not days off, what they put into their legs in training. And it's as important as, you know, a tactical approach or knowing what player to pick is knowing when players get in off the training ground. Steve Coppell used to go nuts at us when we'd be out practicing extra, mm-hmm. and you always hear it's the practice extra, stay on the pitch, do more, that's the mantra all the time. You have to be the last one in. He would be banging on the door of his office, which looked out at the pitch, the window of his office, get in off the pitch, you know, do not be out there, get in straight away. He'd wait on the pitch for everyone to get in. He'd kicking off it, because he was a big believer in you having that energy in your legs was a massive thing for the game. And it is, you know, you know how much you play, lads, whether it's 5-a-side, whatever, but you know when you go out in the day, some days you have it in your legs, other days you know from the first, oh, I'm not to get to, I thought it was fit, but I can't move. It's probably because you've done too much. But yeah, there's my spiel over it.
No,
training and fitness.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. It's without the one thing that dawned on me when you were saying that actually about the enjoyable part of training was that Jose was also saying after the game with Liverpool how angry he was because they'd spent, I think it was 45 minutes working on defensive throws in training in the build-up, and that's how they conceded the goal. But, like, yeah. You know, I imagine there are, like, these necessities that you have to go through in the week of a match, especially when you're looking at the opposition, that are just so mind numbingly boring that you have to just get through. It's what you get paid the big bucks for, I suppose.
Yeah, well, yeah, you do. There's meetings and there's things, and you're sitting there and you know you've heard it all before. You know you don't need to see it. And see that throwing, he said they did 45 minutes doing a throwing. Well, like, they're all been professionals for a long time. You would imagine they could look at that throwing on a video, maybe do it once or twice on a pitch, whatever Liverpool they were practicing, defending Liverpool throwing it. But, you know, saying that they've done it 45 minutes, to me, sounds like overkill. Sounds like he's trying too hard. But in players' heads as well. And players just switch off. I don't know. Any meeting, anything you're in, if you're going longer than 20 minutes on one subject, if you're going 45 minutes on a throwing, you'll have lost the players for the last 20 minutes of that. It doesn't care whether they're paid millions or paid nothing. It doesn't matter what you are. You 45 minutes on a throwing, I'm sure he's exaggerating with that. But like, it just, you know, that's when managers become, that's when you see it happening, they become so fixated on one thing, and you know, as players, and they're thinking, he's nuts here, we're doing a throwing here for 45 minutes, come on. You know, you can do this in 10 minutes on a video and maybe a couple of minutes on the pitch and it's done. But that's become, when you do things like that, and then one player will pipe up and say, well, what if this happens? And then you go through a scenario that's not going to happen in 5 million years, but you spend 20 minutes on a training pitch because one fucking idiot has piped up and said, the goalie goes forward first. But you know what I mean? So, I've beaten all those, and they're just so, yeah. If you practice something like that for that long defending, it's bound to get you. It always happens. Yeah. It gets you the weekend. You'll always concede from it. It's just sod's law. And if you make a point of something or pick it out, it's always going to hit you. So,
just anyway, to make the manager angry. Liverpool, it was only 1-0 in the end and Spurs had a chance of conceding, but ultimately it was like one of those Liverpool performances where you're just like, this team has reached a new level and they're keeping the ball from Spurs. They had the least amount of passes and stuff. And you look at them now, they've won 12 in a row since they had that draw at Old Trafford, the only time they've dropped points. They haven't conceded in 6 in the league now as well, so they've tightened everything up in the defence. They look almost in better form than they have been all season. I can't see United getting anything off them again this week, can you?
No, it's hard to, no, I've done my leather thing, and it's a win, a convincing win for Liverpool. Man United have been good against the big teams, but in fact, like, Firmino's touch for his goal against Spurs, it didn't really get, I don't know if it got picked up on too much, but he looked unreal in that game, and every time Liverpool went forward they looked dangerous, looked like they score like they always do, but his touch for that goal was so good. As the ball came to him from short distance away at pace, and he just opened his body up with one touch and finished it. You know, that was just so, I'm just watching that at the time thinking, my god, they're all playing with confidence, they're all on fire. I'd like them to sign someone actually, or more than one or two players. There's a lot of games between now and the end of the season. I think the league side of it should be coasting pretty much now to the end of the season. It's easy for us to say if you're a Liverpool fan up there, you won't be seeing that for them. That should be fun up, but yeah, it's hard to see anything other than them beating Man United. Throw themselves into it and be up for a big derby game. The players will be trying and running around and jumping into stuff and things, but you'd imagine once you settle down, Liverpool are just too good on the, you know, they'll have to come out a bit, and they're just too good at getting on the counter attack, and they look like Gore at every opportunity.
Aside from the Liverpool United game, obviously you have to follow up a good performance last week with the Southampton prediction with another one this week. What are you looking at?
Burnley need a win, I think. They're playing Leicester. Seems like I'm dogging Leicester here 2 weeks in a row going against them. But, you know, they've lost the game now, and they're not in as good a form, Leicester. And Burnley really need to get a win, need to get themselves going. Nitty gritty performance from Burnley, I can see them. A 1-0 Burnley win.
Grand one. Geez, you've been very exact with that. It's a 3-1 on Ladbrokes.com overall, just for them to win. We'll have a look at the odds as well for 1-0, but that's when we were playing 1-2-3 as well ourselves earlier on Ladbrokes, trying to come up. But that Leicester Burnley, it's hard to call. You're going for Burnley. I think we just edged it for Leicester. Yeah. But we'll see next week who ends up right.
Well, you're on a roll, Kevin, so we'll trust you over us for the time being.
You know, I'm trying to pick bets where there'll be decent odds. I'm not just trying to go with the easier picks, but you know, if you want a bit of value, then definitely. I think that's an okay one anyway.
Cheers, Kevin. We'll chat to you next week.
Cheers, lads. Talk to you soon. Thanks.
So Kevin's on a roll and he's going for Burnley to beat Leicester, and all I can think of is more bloody good news for Aston Villa. Everybody who goes down to the bottom three except for Villa just goes with these unbelievable runs and they end up at like 10th of the table. Watford, Southampton, now Burnley are going to start it as well.
Yeah, well, Villa will be due one soon enough. You're going to have to wait now. Going by the trend, I'm going to say early March,
Maybe. Can I give you a mad stat, Mark? Actually, this is a very Aston Villa orientated for like the majority of people listening. It'll be Liverpool, United, etc. But I'll give you one Villa, very Villa-centric stat, right?
Go on.
They've played 11 games against teams that are currently in the top half of the table, in the top 10, right? They've had, do you know how many points they've won?
I'd say one.
Yeah, 1 point. Two all draw against Manchester United. They've lost every other game against teams that are currently in the top.
It seems
to be
that.
They have 20 points in their 11 games against teams in the bottom half, you know, but it's just, that's crazy.
Yeah, because even last week when we were discussing 1-2-3 and I was like, geez, sure, Aston Villa can't buy you in their terrible run. And they were like, well, they beat Burnley last week. And yeah. It was like, it's because nearly every game that's a big Aston Villa game that's televised that there's a bit of buzz around.
Yeah.
Is obviously, they're generally against teams in the top 10 and they generally lose them all. Yeah. So from the outside looking in, my whole, like, thought process for Aston Villa is, oh yeah, they've lost every game this season.
Yeah, look, it's they've got Brighton away this week, and this is a team they did beat. They were very, very lucky to beat them at Villa Park, but like, again, this is the kind of game they have to win anyway. Look, enough of Villa. I'm being very, very self-indulgent here, but I just thought that was an interesting stat for a team that are only a point off safety. They've had 1 point against teams at the top half of the table.
As we mentioned when we were chatting to Kevin, the 1-2-3 this week includes Burnley against Leicester. It's your chance to win €100 cash on ladbrokes.com by correctly predicting the scores of three of this weekend's football matches. Last week was both encouraging and also complete disaster when you look at it, Mick. Because
yeah, you'd rather be way off.
Yeah, you'd rather be. Yeah. So last week we both went for 1-0 Liverpool and Tottenham.
We did.
Nailed that. We both went for 2-0 Watford against Bournemouth.
Oh, Mark.
I looked at the score of this. I checked the score with 10 minutes to go, or it was less than 10 minutes to go, and Watford were 2-0 up. I was like, grand, that's a €5 free bet. At least we roll on, we're going for the €100 cash. And then you text me, killer last kick of the game goal. I was like, this has to be Watford and Bournemouth. And sure enough, it was.
Yeah, she didn't even know what sport I was talking about. Yeah, so I watch it, like, I'm in the sitting room, and the match is on in the sitting room, and it's like, for some reason, we weren't in there, and it was sort of, the football was just on all day, and I was kind of, the doors were open, and I could hear if there was a goal kind of thing, you know. So I ran in and saw that Watford had got 2-0 up. It was about 70 minutes. I'm like, this is perfect. This is bang on. You know, you go in the middle of each half. That's what you want for a 2-0 win. Very happy with things. Looking at Mark Travers, you know, watched it for a few minutes and thinking like, oh, Bournemouth need to stem the tide here, whatever. And then off doing my thing, and next thing I just hear, and I went, that's a bloody goal. That sound, because it could have been full time, but I went, that sound is a goal. And went in and discovered that they'd scored with literally, I would say, 20 seconds of injury time left on the clock. And I'm like, oh, no.
And then also I wanted to go 5-0 for Man City against Aston Villa.
Yeah.
You were like, no, it's not going to be that big. And Villa are going to score a goal anyway, because they always score at home. You were right.
It was half right.
Yeah, we were both half right. So if we'd actually gone for 6-1, we could have been here sitting pretty. But look, we go again.
We compromised it the wrong way.
Yeah.
But anyway, look, we got a €1 free bet. I've got some ideas for that. We'll talk about it later. But I'm more and more convinced over the course of the season that we're going to get the 100 one time. One of us will.
Like, yep. Yeah. This week's games, Newcastle against Chelsea, Saturday evening, 5:30. Very hard to predict. Two of the most unpredictable teams at the minute. Newcastle could go out and beat Chelsea 3-1 all of a sudden here, having lost, I think they've won one win in the last five or something.
Yeah, Newcastle are weird. I even looked at it. I went to see, is there a trend when they play against like old top six? So I basically looked at the old top six and Leicester, right? So seven, say. And they've played 9 games. They've had 7 points, scored 6 goals. Pretty much the same as what Newcastle's kind of run is anyway. A little bit worse, obviously. Yeah. But, you know, they held City. They've, you know, they beat Man United. they're just all over the shop, like, you know. So they're so hard to predict at any time. They're so badly injured, though.
That's
they lost another two players this week.
Yeah, like, there's a good chance Anton Dyck may have to start as their centre-back partnership.
Alan Shearer is back for another hat-trick to equal Aguero.
I think because of that, and because like Mason Mount come back into a bit of form, Tammy Abraham was scoring it last weekend, I'm going to go Chelsea 2-0.
That's my instinct, too. I'm going 2-0 as well. That's my pick. So
next one, yeah. Burnley against Leicester. As we mentioned there, Kevin's gone for a Burnley win. I think Leicester just about squeezed 2-1, yeah. But I'm not all that confident.
Are you going 2-1 as well here?
Yeah,
that's my pick here. We can't. These are ridiculous.
We're on song. We're this is the same as last week though. Like, it's a good sign if we're close if we're kind of picking the same, because we're very close last week. So I don't mind that.
Yeah.
I
see where he's coming from. They need a win, and Leicester might be there for the taking at the moment. But Burnley have lost 4 in a row. They've lost 7 out of their last 9 in the Premier League. They're in really, really bad form. So just bear that in mind, you know. But Turf Moor is still going to be a tough place to go.
Yep. And then Liverpool against Manchester United. I'm going to go for 2-0 here. We went 3-0 before Christmas. We were badly wrong. I'm not as confident now. Like, I know they're going to, I think they're going to win, definitely. But I'm not going to be all blazing. Oh, Liverpool are going to win 3-0. I'm going to go 2-0.
I don't necessarily see United scoring as such, so much as that I'm just going to play the odds and think that 6 clean sheets in a row is something that might come to an end at some stage. So I'm going to go for Liverpool to win 3-1.
You get, I think they're going to score a goal.
Enough. Who?
United are going to score a goal.
There's no reason that they can't. United don't really have that much issue scoring goals. It's winning games that they have a problem with. Yeah. You know, they won, what did they win, 4-0 at the weekend? I know Norwich are a slightly different team than Liverpool.
But look.
Just going to play the odds of goal. Like, here, you think Aston Villa are good enough to score a goal against Man City? But I bet on them to do it, because I just thought they'd somehow do it, and they did with a last-second penalty.
Liverpool clean sheets are destroying me anyway in fantasy football, because everybody seems to own two Liverpool defenders, and I owned none.
I have Alisson.
The last couple of weeks. I don't think I ever spoke about it on the podcast.
Oh, God.
So when Matip got injured, I went, oh, well, that's Joe Gomez coming into my fantasy football team. And I said it out loud in the office as I did it. And two Liverpool fans in the office immediately turned around and went, but Joe Gomez isn't going
to
start.
It was Lovren's me actually who did it to you. I'm not a Liverpool fan. I just went, Joe Gomez, it's going to be Lovren.
Because Lovren had started in the Champions League or something during the week. I was like, bollocks. Because it literally just hit okay or confirm. And then I kept Gomez. I had more important things to do. I just threw Gomez on my bench as he was losing me value every week, and just started making other more important transfers. And then eventually at the start of December, got round to selling Gomez. He started every game since and has kept 6 clean sheets in a row.
He's literally in the best form of his football career since you sold him a fantasy
Thanks
football.
Thanks to me. I honestly
talk about the jinx a lot, Mark, but you do offer a lot of evidence.
If anyone doesn't believe me, I will tweet at balls to DOTAE, and I'll tweet you back the screenshot of the week I bought him and the week I sold him. And it's all, you can just see it, 0000098 67. So look at, anyway, we move on. There are 1-2 free picks for the weekend. I'm upset now. But look at, I'm going to be happy when I win €100 cash after getting all these scores correct. You can on to labrooks.com right now and play it yourself. Up next, we're going to talk to Stephen Ferris about this weekend's Champions Cup games. Stephen, we'll be chatting more about Ireland in weeks to come, but we couldn't let the moment pass. The squad has just been named for the Six Nations just before we came on air chatting to you. What's your immediate reaction to it?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I'm just looking through it, I suppose. From an Ulster perspective, and like watching the style and the class and standard of rugby that Ulster have played this season, I'm really, really disappointed for Stuart McCluskey, who has been left out of the squad. I know he was included in the wider squad there about 6 weeks ago, and everybody thought that Andy Farrell was maybe going to give him an opportunity at some stage, but no, that seems like that door has been closed once again. And yes, at the weekend against Claremont, there was one opportunity where he should have let a pass go, and possibly Ulster would have had a 4-on-1 in the corner, but he put the head down. And I just had this feeling that Andy Farrell could probably bring out the best of Stuart McCluskey. He could maybe, you know, help him work on that part of his game, recognising space outside him, making the right decisions at the right times. You know, Farrell played in the centre for England. He more or less played at half back for Wigan Warriors for years. So, you know, he could have pointed him in the right direction. But I'm sure Stuart McCluskey isn't sitting at home feeling very, very sorry for himself, because I don't know what else he can do. He leads all the stats and everything this season in both European Cup and Pro 14. So utterly disappointed for him. And, you know, I honestly thought Farrell would have given him an opportunity, but not the case.
Do you think that might be down to what you were talking about last week as well, in terms of his versatility, just that he can't really cover 12 and 13, that maybe that's something to weigh against him? It's hard to know, though, because, again, if you're going on foreign players, he was really a standout probably coming into this week.
Yeah, I think I told you guys about your actor, Stuart McCluskey, is going to get much, you know, international exposure, and I was like, probably not. And the reason for that is because of, you know, he really only played 12, and that Bundy Aki, Robbie Henshaw are two lads that are in front of him, and seem to be, you know, in terms of Ireland selection, a good bit in front of him. So unless one of those lads or both of those lads come down with injury, he's probably not going to get a look in. However, I still thought he would have been in the mixer in terms of the squad, been able to show Andy Farrell what he's about. But, you know, I think it's still pretty raw seeing that squad and not seeing his name there. And I suppose it doesn't give much hope that the other lads are playing out of their skins. Somebody like Lee Craddock as well, who's been brilliant and isn't getting the look in. It's a strange one.
Yeah, and we'll talk about the forwards in a minute, but I'm just looking at the kind of backs, because I think everybody's first, and like in our office, like where everybody's waiting for the team to come in, and I mean, everybody's reaction, the first person, like, you know, without any kind of Ulster bias here outside of Mark, you know, everybody in the office still kind of like almost in a neutral kind of way just went, geez, there's no Stuart McCluskey there. It does kind of stand out. But when I'm just kind of breaking it down here, you've got three scrum halves and three out halves. And we'll talk about Billy Burns getting the call up in a second.
Yeah.
You've got, you know, you kind of, your wingers in Keith Earl, Stockdale and Conway were kind of nailed on. Dave Kearney gets the call as the fourth winger. You've got Jordan Larimer and Addison kind of covering full back. Obviously, Addison can cover everywhere, but the centre in particular, and the centre, the World Cup centres of Bundy Aki, Henshaw, Ringrose, and Chris Farrell. Like, it's funny when you kind of break it down by position, it does kind of like, there isn't that opening. But at the same time, for a new coach making his new mark, it does kind of suggest, like, you know, you need to be a little bit bold here, and there is the informed player, and it doesn't say a lot for the players playing, you know, the people who kind of say, you know, is this guy going to pick on form or is he going to pick on reputation?
Yeah, like you said there, you know, Andy Farrell, you know, putting a new stamp or a new mark on his team, I don't think he has. And you know, that was something that I was really looking forward to, was seeing what, you know, what surprises he was going to make. And yes, he's added somebody like Tom O'Toole into the forwards there, Hefferman as well, you know, in there. But like, no, there wasn't really a huge surprise selection added in there at all. It's the same old faces, but as I've said a number of times over the last couple of years, when it comes to international rugby, you know, experience counts for an awful lot. So maybe Andy Farrell, his first Six Nations major tournament in charge of Ireland, he wants to try and, you know, be a little selfish and you know, make sure that he goes with that experience, goes with guys that he's worked with previously and trust. Hopefully they come up trumps for him in the first couple of games, and he can get off to a winning start as an Ireland head coach. That's probably what he's thinking about, and the rest of the coaches and staff are thinking about. But like McCluskey, I'm still thinking about it here. Like, it's kind of like, get over it. Somebody like my cat as well, who's coming in, he'd be going, you know what, I can't wait to get my hands on this guy. I can't wait to work on a few things with him, and we'll look at this, and we'll run our video analysis, you know, keys that you might look out for to make you a better player. Yet again, he's, in my opinion, shafted. Like, so, but I think Stuart has been a one-man club. He's always hung around Ulster, and, you know, clubs in France will be knocking on his door if he decides to walk away from rugby in Ireland. I know he loves the province well, and, you know, he's probably getting well paid and everything else at Ulster, but he could certainly go across the water to England or to France and make a hell of a lot of money. And I think, personally speaking, in my own opinion, you know, he does still have international ambitions. And when you keep getting that door closed in your face, and sometimes you have to make a decision for yourself and for your family. And, you know, who knows what's around the corner for sure, but plus.
Yeah, I suppose the other side of that is that it's a long tournament, and, you know, if one of those guys does, you know, succumb to injury, which isn't beyond the realms of possibility, he could still find himself being called up at some stage over the course of the tournament. Just looking at the squad here, though, you mentioned Reece Ruddock not being in, McCluskey not being in. There's, in terms of, like, the way he's, like, it's not a squad picked for youth, but it's also not a squad picked, like, based on experience. There doesn't seem to be a real pattern to it. Like, if you look, like, it's great to see guys like Max Deegan, Caelan Dorris, Dave Heffernan, Ronan Kelleher, Jack O'Donoghue, Tom O'Toole, Billy Burns, as we mentioned earlier, and, you know, and these guys being called up. But at the same time, then, like, it's like he's gone back to Devin Toner. He's back in the squad. It kind of, like, so there's no kind of, it doesn't seem to be a cut-off point, which makes, I suppose, we were talking about McCluskey, but it makes the exclusion of Reece Ruddock even all the more surprising, doesn't it? That there doesn't seem to be this kind of, like, move just to the future.
No, like Reece Ruddock's 29 years of age. Like, you know, he could certainly make another World Cup. He just turned 29. You know, France in 3 years' time or 4 years' time, he's only going to be 32 years of age. Like, so, just, you know, he's playing the rugby of his life. He's captain Leinster. Question that I would ask you guys: who do you think is playing better rugby, Reece Ruddock or Jack O'Donoghue? I would say Reece Ruddock. Reece Ruddock has been consistently better than him over the last, you know, the last year or so. I know Jack O'Donoghue, he's come back. He's come back into the mixture, and he's been reasonably well. Maybe he's been playing pretty well in an average Munster team over the last couple of months. So maybe that's why he stood out a little bit more for Andy Barrell. But again, Reece Ruddock, Mr. Consistent, steady, really good ball carrier, physical, and he's got experience, and he's been overlooked. And I suppose he's another one of those ones, guys, where he's going, geez, what do I have to do here? Like, you know, I know some of the rock stars at Leinster, like Max Deegan and Dylan Doris, grab the headlines on a weekly basis because of, you know, some of their game-changing moments that they make. And maybe Reece doesn't make enough of those for Andy Farrell's liking. But for me, I thought he certainly would have been in there. Again, only in my opinion, I thought he would have been in ahead of Jack O'Donoghue.
Right, yeah, and a kind of a leader in the squad as well. One thing that is, like, on a kind of, I suppose, a more positive note, or, you know, I suppose that it's a question as to whether it's a good decision long term, but at least for the Six Nations anyway, Johnny Sexton has been named the captain. You know, we talked about this a little bit after the World Cup as to kind of who was next. Is the, like, do you think, you agree that this is probably the obvious choice, at least for the short term?
I'm not sure, guys. Like, you know, I played under 21 with Johnny. He's 34. Like, he's not getting any younger. A lot of people 18 months ago, when Roy Best sort of had announced that he was kind of on his way out, you know, everybody was looking at the Peter O'Mahony. Peter O'Mahony captained the Lions in the first test in 2017. So it's crazy how things, you know, change so quickly. Like, and I think, is he the right man for the job? I think he probably is in the short term, but going forward, I think Andy Farrell needs to look at somebody in the pack going forward. And I think it's always easier when you have a captain in the pack. They're closer to the referee all the time. I think, you know, even talking about the Scotland game, you know, Stuart Hall being captain of Scotland, or being named captain of Scotland, I think that's, you know, just a crazy decision, like madness. A fullback being captain, running in and out, speaking to the referees, and we all know how important that is. I mean, especially in international rugby, the demeanour that you speak to the referee and the way decisions are handled is crucial. And also the fact that, you know, Stuart Hall plays his rugby in Exeter and, you know, has walked away from the Scottish, you know, two teams in Scotland, but yet he's going to be captain of Scotland. So I don't think that's really, you know, a way that Scotland I've looked at this and went, you know what, this is the right decision. Now, here, don't get me wrong, he's a fantastic player. He's absolutely brilliant. I know I'm getting away from the Irish thing here, but yeah, in terms of Johnny Sexton, I think, for the short-term lads, it's probably the right decision. It's maybe been the easy decision for Andy Farrell.
It's probably a case of almost giving, you know, if it is to be James Ryan for the next World Cup, it's probably not going to be a 38-year-old Johnny Sexton, and to see, give him another year or two of, you know, or a year anyway, of like getting caps and being a pack leader almost in the absence of Rory Best, and then, you know, see where that takes you. Maybe it's a kind of a short-term solution to somebody who probably isn't, if it's not going to be Peter O'Matney, there really isn't an obvious long-term choice there quite yet, is there?
No, I don't think so. The only other one's Ian Henderson, who's captain Ulster really well this season. I think he made a couple of wrong decisions again in the week, and just with getting the scoreboard taken over. And, you know, personal opinion again is that, you know, Rory Best probably would have pointed to the post a couple of times. But again, that's all about the learning curve. Is he an Irish captain at the minute? Probably not. He might be in the next 15 months, 2 years, and he's still young enough to be able to do that. But I think you're right. You know, James Ryan, he's a lot of experience as captain in the under-20, doing very well at that, and he seems like a bit of a guy that the lads will sort of, you know, almost build around and trust, not only because of his actions on the pitch, but the way, you know, controls himself off the pitch. So yeah, I think, you know, James Ryan is somebody that Ireland and Andy Farrell will probably look to in the future to be Ireland captain.
Speaking of Ulster forwards, just looking through the squad as well, like if you look at the likes of Jack McGrath back in, it shows you like someone who's getting out of Leinster can be good for these players and getting that first team rugby. And then also the inclusion of Tom O'Toole as well, like that's maybe a surprise to some. Can you talk to us a little bit about what you're talking about, the way it would be for McCluskey getting into that squad? It's going to be brilliant for him to be around the Ireland camp for his development.
Yeah, it'd be brilliant. There's no doubt that he's got a lot of attributes that makes him a bloody good rugby player. His physicality, he's very strong, he's athletic. But we got to remember that it was, you know, David Nussafour that instigated all this of bringing Tom O'Toole back into the Irish setup. And I wonder just how much influence, you know, Nussafour has on Irish squad selection and everything else. Because, you know, I think he's a young guy, but, you know, there's a couple other players that will be pretty pissed off that, you know, a young gun is ahead of him, considering he's hardly started a match this season. So, yeah, it's brilliant for Tom, it's brilliant for Ulster, and he's getting exposure at this level and the intensity of training and everything else. But if I was, you know, one of those guys down in Munster who probably didn't get selected, then I'd be pretty pissed off, to be honest.
You mentioned the Ulster game and some of the decision making there earlier on, just going back to the games at the weekend. That match against Clermont, the lads on BBC Ulster were saying just before half time when Parra was standing over that penalty to make it 10-9 that, do you know, it's unbelievable to think that Ulster were only going in a point up at half time. Was that kind of what was standing out in your mind going into half time, that they hadn't put the scores on the board? And then also, is it something that I was just wondering at the time, does that stick in the players' mind when they're going into the dressing room where they haven't gotten probably the scores that they deserve or that they should be further ahead, that it's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy that you're sort of going out into the second half, maybe a slightly nervous thinking, geez, we should be further ahead here?
Yeah, definitely, Mark. I think it's something that, you know, players afterwards and press conferences will probably say, oh yeah, we didn't even think about it at half time. You know, you go out, you try and win the second half. I think that's complete nonsense. I think when you go in, you know, realistically, it probably should have been, 16-6 at half time, you know, if things had panned out the way they hoped it would have. But it didn't. They went to the corner, an overthrow, you know, just a couple of silly decisions were made, and, you know, like they'll regret not taking their points, but at the same time, they went over there, they took it to Clermont, and they did take it to them for large parts of the game, but, you know, Clermont have a massively successful home record, and it was going to take a huge effort to get a result, and unfortunately for Ulster, they find themselves in a position now where they are looking like the way Bath are sitting at the bottom of Ulster's pool, that they'll probably hammer Bath this weekend. Excuse me, get 5 points, but that won't be enough to get them a home quarter final. And yet again, they're probably going to have to go away from home and put in their best performance of the season to maybe sneak a quarter final win.
With the Munster game as well, it was interesting. We were talking about the two games, was reflecting on them, because it was such a similar really last 10 minutes with both games, where they're kind of hanging in the balance, and then end up like convincing victories. But I suppose Munster again, it's that they just are out in their legs. They don't seem to have the strength and depth, whereas Ulster, when you have the likes of O'Toole and O'Sullivan, do you know, you can see that they're kind of, you know, that experience is probably going to stand them going forward, whereas Munster, maybe this is just the level they're at right now.
Yeah, I think Munster, I actually didn't watch on TV. I listened to Michael Corcoran on the radio, and it felt like Munster, even though they were in the game, the whole game, it felt like that Bassing had another gear to go into, and then when they did find themselves 23-29 with, you know, what, 10 minutes on the clock, I know it was a inspirational bit of skill by Terry Thomas to get the ball down in the corner, or did it get down? We don't know well, these dodgy camera angles. But it did feel like they get up at another gear, and unfortunately for Munster, they ran out of a bit of gas, slipped off a couple of tackles. Their tackle percentage wasn't great during the day, and you know, they were convincingly beaten in the end. But I don't think, you know, if you stopped the game after 70 minutes, you could say, look, probably passing where you always felt like they could up it, but Munster would have run out victorious. But that's just the way the rugby's going at the minute for Munster. They're finding themselves in a difficult position, and when you're in that small bit of a hole, it really is hard to get out of it. And you know, another defeat for them, and it just keeps building up the pressure on the coaching staff and all the Munster lads.
Yeah, I was actually saw you were retweeting a few really interesting stats about the fact that they've got the most carries so far this year in the Champions Cup, but yet the least meters per carry of any team. Like, is that something that shows, is it indicative of the problem that they have, that they're kind of going down the same hole and they're not getting anywhere?
Yeah, I think so. It's the creativity, and everybody was so excited about Joey Carper coming back, and now he's out with his wrist injury. Seen a photo of him on Instagram. He looks like he's got a bit of a plaster. That's not good news, obviously, from an Irish perspective and Munster. But you know, JJ Hanrahan equipped himself really, really well at the weekend. They're off to a half decent start, knocking over a couple of penalties. It was good for his confidence. But I think, you know, with Scannell and Farrell in the centres, there's not that much creativity between the two big fellas. Like, they are two big guys and they are pretty direct. And I think, you know, with Conway, who is one of the best players in Irish rugby, the ability that he has, they need to get the ball to him more often. How often do you see Conway scoring tries on the edge with the ball getting, you know, fed out to him along the line and then scoring after 5 or 6 phases or 10 or 15 phases? Rarely. Conway's always, you know, popping up at the right time and, you know, inside balls off 10, and you know, he's always scoring those tries, you know, almost like poacher tries instead of just finishing them off in the corner. And I just think that Munster's creativity is lacking slightly, but at the same time, when they're leaking tries, you know, I think there's a crazy stat that the amount of tries that Munster leak in first 3 phases of play is something like 90% of the tries that they concede is in the first 3 phases. So, you know, that's something in other areas of the game that they need to look at. They're just in a different position at the minute. Yeah, I know they've got a handy enough game this weekend against the Ospreys, where they can ride a few runs from last week, but it's not going to be good enough to get through to the quarterfinal.
It's funny, you know, we always build up on the show. It's called The Build Up, but, you know, there's not that much to really get our teeth stuck into this weekend. Like, it's funny for round 6, you know, we're always knee deep in permutations at this stage, but ultimately what we're looking at is Leinster kind of, like, you know, pretty much locked in, and we've got Ulster, you know, pretty much locked in, you would think, to the you know, the best runners up, and, you know, Munster, a lot would have to go their way for them to get through at this stage. We don't really think it's their year, and Connacht are kind of gone. It is a bit of a strange one. Do you think that the competition has lacked luster a little bit this year compared to other years, or is it just like a coincidence of the way the rounds have kind of have come up? I just don't sense the same kind of general excitement there as there has been in the past.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that. I think something that I've noticed out the tournament, especially when Ulster beat Bath in that first game away from home, that Bath almost threw the towel in, straight after that game, and have been really disappointing the way throughout the tournament. Once Leinster went to Lyon, who were flying high at the top of the French top 14, when they got that away victory, they more or less threw the towel in, and there seems to be another couple of teams there also. So, the likes of Gloucester still in after getting by Toulouse at home, but it just feels that, there's four or five teams that are a good bit better than everybody else, and, there's other two or three positions in the top eight. Will be like they're going to be snapped up by the likes of Saracens, by the likes of Ulster, it just seems that there hasn't been the same anticipation coming in the round six as there has been in previous years.
Before we let you go, as you mentioned this, a lot of the games have wrapped up. It's a difficult one for making any predictions for the weekend. Have any bets caught your eye? You're looking at, like, Ulster are massive favourites here. I'm seeing us bat. They're 23 point favourites. It's almost like trying to find find a needle in a haystack, but it's like pin the tail on the donkey, trying to guess what the winner
Mark's confusing would be his farmyard games against you. I don't know what's going on.
Mark, you're sounding like Eddie Sullivan here. Like.
It's like looking for a Mars bar in a bucket of shit.
very good. Very good. Like, for me, I think weather, just looking at the forecast going forward, is due to be pretty decent this weekend. And it would not surprise me if Ulster dismantled that 23-point handicap. It seems like a lot in a European Champions Cup match. But Bath have nothing to play for, absolutely nothing. They're away from home. Ulster have lost to Kingspan Stadium since 18 years ago, something like that. And they're definitely not going to come over here and get a result. They might take their in for a large part of the game, but I honestly think that Ulster are going to rack up a Leinster score and maybe put 40 points on the board. That would be my prediction for that one. So I'm going to go for Ulster beating that handicap of 23 points. There's another game this weekend, which is an interesting one. We're passing 92 going to Saracens.
Yeah.
It's a 13-point handicap in Saracens' favour. And the reason for that is because Saracens are going to go full bore. Every single player that they have available and fit, and that they would use his part if it was the European Champions Cup final world plan. And Racing 92 going away from home might struggle in this match. It's going to be tight, but I feel that Racing 92 are actually going to hang in there if they're a handicap. So I would be going Racing 92 plus 13 points against Saracens.
10-11 on Ladbrokes.com. Thanks a million, Stephen.
No problem. Cheers, lad.
All right, hold it. Just hold it, Alan.
Push him out.
Steady, David, don't! Get round! No, don't! Platy!
Platy indeed.
Platy indeed. I like the idea of running up a Leinster score.
Yeah. I like that Ulster are going to rack up a Leinster score is what Stevie said there, which is kind of just like, Leinster have established themselves so much as the team that hammers them that worldwide a big score is known as a Leinster score. That's quite the legacy to leave as a rugby team.
Yeah, and especially when you're only halfway through the season.
Unbeaten. Leinster is the unbeaten team. We didn't really talk much about them there because there's nothing really to talk about. But Leinster going through, we're now in late January. Or mid-January, and they're still unbeaten this season. It's not beyond the realms of possibility. And the idea that a rugby team would go undefeated for an entire season of league in Europe.
Imagine the Leinster-Liverpool fans.
Oh my God, yeah.
Be insufferable. God. But anyway, look at it.
Poor Arsenal are losing all the records left and centre, even in different sports.
Exactly. If you are having a bet on any of the games this weekend, be sure to gamble responsibly. You can visit dunlewy.net for more information. But the sound of Graham Taylor would indicate that it is indeed time for the big shout. It's your chance to win 2 cakes and a sports biography. If you send us in a prediction for the sport weekend that is 25-1 or greater, just send us a screenshot of the betting slip on ladbrokes.com. You don't even have to place the bet. Just put it in, take a screenshot, email it to the gaffer at Buzz.ie. If it comes off, like Dermot Murray did before Christmas, you will win yourself 2 cakes and a sports biography. This week, I was let down by the jester from Leicester, Mark Selby,
yeah,
and a couple of other ones, but we'll not get into it because Mick, well, you're back.
I've got to give it a go. We still haven't done it. We're going to do it, right? Only one person has ever won the two cakes in a sports biography. And we're going to give it another go. This week, I want to start with the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship. You mentioned it earlier on the show. Shane Lowry won this tournament last year. Nice big golf tournament in the European Tour. Brooks Koepka's playing in this. Him and Tommy Fleetwood are top of the betting. Shane Lowry is playing again. He's tipping in, as usual, being completely underrated by everybody who's betting on this. But not going to be underrated by me. However, because it's part of a big shout, I'm just showing him in. So, somewhat of a safe bet. Shane to make it into the top 20 in this tournament. The tournament he loves so well. Set him on the track for his open win last year. 10 to 11 to finish in the top 20. I'm going to go for that. Curra Finn. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes. They're playing the All-Ireland football final against Kilku. I'm going for them at 2-7. Then Tullerone, they're playing in the All-Ireland Intermediate Hurling final. Again, we're going to talk about this with Morris in a few minutes. That's Tommy Walsh and his brothers. One of whom is currently on the Kilkenny team. I feel like it's unfair to...
Tommy's always the star.
It's unfair to put Pádraig second on the bill there, actually, yeah. Well, they're going up against Father O'Neill's from Cork. They're 8-13. I really fancy them to do it. Okay, so that's two All-Ireland finals covered. I'm leaving the senior hurling final alone because I'm not 1,000% sure about Ballyhale winning that one.
We'll get into that in depth in a few.
NFL, we're going to talk about in more detail in the while as well, so I won't go into too much detail, but basically I'm going for two results here. One with the handicap, which is going to get these odds up a little bit. I'm going to go for the Tennessee Titans +7 at the Kansas City Chiefs, and I'm just going to go for the San Francisco 49ers to win at 2-7, just on the money line, just to win the game against the Green Bay Packers at home. Two more. This is a tough one, Mark. I think there's seven in this, right? I'm going for, in the Premier League, Brighton are playing Aston Villa this weekend. Aston Villa, I even said to you last week, now they were lucky to do it, even with no strikers, tend to get goals in games. They just tend to score in almost every game this season. Brighton, however, will definitely score in this game. The Villa do not have a defence. They are absolutely, and even with flat back five against City, they were still an open book. Both teams will score in this game. That's 8-13. Both teams to score, yes. And then finally, I've gone to the Championship, your beloved EFL Championship, where Nottingham Forest on a run, they've won three out of their last four games. They drew at Reading the last day. They're in really good.
Did you see the finish of that game? It was mental.
I didn't know. What happened?
So Nottingham Forest, I think, scored in the 93rd or 5th minute. Definitely not the 4th, but 3rd or 5th. And then the commentary was there, oh my God, a goal with no time left to respond. Then Reading took the tip off, went straight up the field, cross came in from the left wing, and the keeper put it into his own net.
Oh my God, okay. Well, maybe that's not the thing that they want to be bringing into this crucial game at home to bottom of the table, Luton, where I need them to win. Luton have conceded 58 goals so far this season. I think it's over 2 a game. So I'm going for Forest just to win that game, right? So that brings us up to, listen to this, Mark, 24.94-1. Oh. Not eligible for a big shout or for two cakes of sports biography until I use the Ladbrokes price boost to bump it up to exactly 27-1. How'd you like that?
27-1, I like it. And look,
this isn't too bad. It's a lot. A lot has to go right. You don't want seven teams, but Shane Lowry top 20, confident. Curra Finn to win the All Ireland, confident. Tullerone to win, confident. Titans +7 against the Chiefs. We'll talk about it in a while.
Yeah,
I've a good feeling for it. You know, it's not definite. The Chiefs are pretty amazing. 49ers very confident. Both teams to score. Brighton and Villa confident, and Forest to beat Luton very confident.
Yeah.
So I'm you know,
you're going to be disgusted when Villa win 1-0. The only time you'll be disgusted this season. But yeah, look, we see if you have a big share of your own, be sure to get in touch. Email thegaffer@balls.ie. And if it comes off, you'll win yourself two cakes and a sports biography. Up next, Morris Barson is going to be in studio and he's going to chat to us. He's going to get us hyped about the GAA and we're going to talk about the NFL as well. So when you see Dre, a DJ on the mic, ask what it's like we're getting hyped tonight. Cause if a strike, Morris, welcome to studio.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
You're getting us hyped for the GAA this weekend. Look, this is one of those, it's not really what we've sold this segment as, because usually it's about stuff people might be paying attention to and we're trying to get them hyped, tell them why they should be interested in it. I think we're all looking forward to these club finals this weekend.
I think we are, but I still think there is a kind of an element of, like, one, it's on a different date than it normally is, and two, sometimes still, even to this day, the club story of these club games and how they build up to this cannot be overlooked a little bit, like, you know.
Yeah, this, it still is a symptom of the, like, they've moved it back from March, obviously, but it still is a symptom of it, just a bit of a departure from the, like, it feels like a new year. People are starting to look ahead, just talk about leagues. We've seen this talk about O'Byrne Cups and a new Desi Farrell era, and in the background then the club is still kind of trundling away. Like, once it's all in the calendar year, it'll be perfect and you'll get kind of that build up of hype. But I do think Mick is right, it is slightly floating a bit under the
radar. There's also the prospect of two very one-sided finals. But with that being said, you're the expert in here, so you're going to tell us everything that's going to happen in the two games now in a second. But funnily enough, Mick has a sneaky feeling for Boris Ali, and I have a sneaky feeling for Kilcoo. So we're perfectly balanced out here. Obviously, both games, you know, Ballyhale against Boris Ali is at 2 p.m. on Sunday, with Corrifane against Kilcoo at 4 p.m. both alive on TG Cahir. And Morris
is going to tell us looking the two at favourites the odds, are going to win handy.
Yeah, looking at the odds, I think it's 3-10 Boris Ali and Ladbrokes, and 2-7 for Corrifane. So, 3-10 for Ballyhale. So it's looking like it could be one-sided, but tell us, is it going
to
be?
No, like, the you do have to bear in mind that that's a Boris Ali team who were as high as 7-2 in a semi-final, were 4-1 in a Munster final, were underdogs in their county final. Like, so the you know, you can only read so much into odds. And it's also worth bearing in mind that particularly after that Munster final, it was referenced a lot that Boris Ali were 4-1, to the extent where that was definitely used as motivation for them in that dressing room. Like, it's, in a lot of ways, it's nearly a dream matchup. Like, I was saying this to Mick off air recently, but to see Brendan Maher against TJ Reid, it's worth entrance fee alone, like, to see those two going at it again. On top of that, then you've got Colin Fennelly, who, you know, like, up until the last couple of minutes, you could make a case for Slotnil that they were going to win that game. Like,
I thought they were. When Rodgers got that goal, I was like, oh, this is Slotnil going to get this out.
It did feel like tide was turning a small bit, yeah.
It's one of those funny situations where, like, does that show that Ballyhale are not unbeatable? But at the same time, does it also it also shows why Ballyhale are the team they are.
If you've got a player like Colin Fennelly,
watch you away.
Who stands up like that. And then I actually think the way you play, like, Fennelly did something, scored a really similar goal against Cork in the All-Ireland quarterfinal last year. It was a really similar goal, and he was marking one of the strongest hurlers in the country. Cadogan was on him at the time, and I actually don't think you get into a bear pit and mix it with him there. I think you need kind of a player who's going to try and nick in front of him, and, like, I actually think you need a nippy kind of Martin Marker as opposed to a big towering presence who would compete with him on the ground, because if the ball's in his hands, you're in trouble. Like, he's just such a powerful presence. And Paddy Stapleton is actually that player now, I think. Like, he has that kind of element of him where he's like a spoiler, you know what I mean? Like, he will spoil ball, and that's what you kind of need to match him. Brendan Maher has shown time and time again already in 2019, like, he cancelled out Aaron Galan, he did a job on TJ already. Like, the funny thing about Brendan Maher is that he will mix it whatever way you want it. So if you need him to be the man marker, the way he was rotating with Dan McCormack in the semi-final was brilliant. He suddenly became this attacking presence in the
Donald
second half.
Donald O'Brien's favourite thing in the world.
which he asked about 100 questions about after the game. But he will mix it any way you want. And given how integral TJ is to this team, like, you look back at that Slotnil game, Mullen was very quiet. I think he only scored a point, if even. Young Cody, who was apparently the new leading light, again, pretty quiet. Players who came to the fore for Ballyhale, as they always do, Colin Fennelly with the goals, TJ Reid with nearly 10 points. That's, like, ultimately crucial. And I think if you boil down on two, and that's why those two matchups are so kind of exciting, because they're, like, without going overboard with it, they're effectively going to decide the game.
I think rightfully the story in a lot of people's mind going into this is Boris Ali. And, you know, you're talking about a Tip versus Kilkenny game, but yet there's, like, one massive underdog and small team versus the kind of aristocrats. But, like, there is also, you know, we shouldn't sleep on the Ballyhale story here either. And, you know, like, that they've experienced tragedy this year, that they're going to, you know, it's going to mean so much to this town and to this parish as well, if they can go. There's also, like, a couple of little storylines there, like, as in, this team, you know, we're going to look at probably one of the best club teams of all time at 4 o'clock. Like, in the hurling, Ballyhale put themselves into that conversation with a win here, you know, as well. And don't forget then as well, you've got their manager, who just so happens to be the best player to ever play the game, and eventually his county are going to need a new manager. And if you have two All-Irelands under your belt, you've already got the name factor, which is going to put you front and centre anyway, in it, like, you know, as somebody that's going to have a huge chance of getting that job, and then he's going to have two All-Irelands under his belt. So there's a lot on Ballyhale's side as well that nobody's going to really talk about because everybody's rightly so consumed with Boris Ali's story.
And in line with this segment, what Mick mentioned there, that's a really good kind of subplot. And the great thing about this, there's a load of those subplots. Like, you look at Offaly in the doldrums of hurling after getting relegated last year, making a really, what was kind of a, looks like a really interesting appointment with Johnny Kelly as number two and Michael Fennelly as number one. And with the two of them have thought that turn the other side of the year, as they're planning for after this year, Michael Fennelly's going to a final against Johnny Kelly managing Boris Lee, like the both of them.
It's
so
insane,
many,
isn't it? Like, yeah.
It's a typical GA problem, but it's kind of a fast, those kind of subplots, like they're everywhere for a game like this, which actually kind of makes it all the more interesting given like what we're going to see on Sunday.
Do you think, like, Mark was talking earlier about like how I have a fancy for Bursley, and it comes from just watching, especially their last two games. I saw them in the Tip County final as well, but just kind of like getting through like heart and staying power and hunger and all these like GAA cliches, but you see it in front of you, you see the evidence in front of you. Like, I mean, St Thomas's weren't in the game for the last 15 minutes because Bursley just wore them out, and it's very hard to bet against a team like that, no matter who they're playing, you know. And I just feel like there's something in the stars about them. But then again, like, there is another side to that, and I'd be interested to know what you think in that, like, maybe eventually you kind of have reached your level and you've exceeded that level, and then you come up against someone that, a group that might just have too much class, and maybe having to mark TJ Reid for a whole match, the like probably best hurler in the country, means that you can't go up and score 3 points in a free roll whenever you want because you're the best player on your team.
It's funny, this conversation, we might actually return to this team slightly with my thoughts on Carrick Finn.
I was about to say, this whole conversation, you could just literally replace Carrick Finn
The reason that I think it's kind of relevant is because you look at this, the Thomas's game particularly was interesting. Like, there's these kind of bright lights in Galway hurling who are littered in this Thomas's team. So you've guys like Fintan Burke, who's supposed to be the next big thing. Conor Cooney was there. But like, at the same time, they're not integral players to that Thomas's team, and they kind of just weren't in the game. They're a bit mismatchy. But the integral players, the players who've carried, like Joseph Cooney or like David Burke, both of them were there, and they were like nullified from the game effectively. Joseph Cooney hit 4 points, but he also had a lot of wise in the second half. Their use of possession was at times terrible, and the reason I bring that up is because it kind of plays into the way Barcelona play. Like, at times, what you would see is a mad clearance. The best example was a ball came up over Brendan Mazur and he just pulled wildly, volleyed the ball over his head, just drilled it towards the forwards, and they lost possession. But they kind of, in a way, it's kind of a tactic because they're so confident that because of the way their half forward line work, when particularly if Brendan Mazur is up there, his point with the broken hurl is a case in point. He comes in, blocks down a keeper, they win the ball back. That they can kind of bank on the fact that they'll turn over a team with that. And I'd actually think that might be a problem this weekend, because if there's any team who are really, really careful about how they use the ball, it's Ballyhale. Yeah. And I think they're a lot tactically shrewder than, definitely than Thomas's were anyway. Like, I don't think they'll be as wasteful. And that game, like, do you remember the amount of times where you'd see a turnover and the reaction to that turnover would be like a huge roar? Like, you could tell the amount of people that are up from tip just by that. And that's like oxygen to the fire, like, really. And I think that a team like Ballyhale are kind of capable of being a bit shrewder about that and kind of denying what is effective their amio, you know.
Last point, in credit to Bursley, is like, we've seen them win in the muck and the shit against Ballygunner, we've seen them play on the nicest January day of all time in Limerick a couple of weeks ago against Thomas's. They can kind of play all kinds of styles. They're not just a kind of a dogged, beat them out sort of team, you know what I mean? They're good hurlers, they're very, very skillful. Like, they're still tip champions after all, do you know what I mean? They're not as big an underdog as we kind of make them out to be a little bit, you know, but... Yeah, no, after this conversation, I am leaning towards Ballyhale, just having too much for them, I have to say.
Yeah, I'm going to bring in, just before we get your prediction, of an old game from Three Man Weave last year. Guess the handicap. Can you guess the handicap for this match? We're going to do both of them. Morris, I'm going to go with you can get pick first for the hurling.
I'll say Ballyhale minus...
He's struggling here. He doesn't like being put in the spot when he's asking no, the question. All right, Forrest thinks about these things.
I'll say Ballyhale minus four.
Ballyhale minus four. Mick, what are you going for?
That's too big.
I won't say minus five because it might be too easy. I'd say it's Ballyhale minus six.
It's Ballyhale minus four.
One is it?
Oh, wow. he does nail these things.
And give us a prediction.
I think Ballyhale... I would... With that spread, I think this game could be a lot closer than that, but I do think Ballyhale are going
to
win.
Ballyhale, so you're saying 1-3. Maybe. Yeah. So Ballyhale to win by 1-3 is 7-2 on Ladbrokes.
Right.
Mick, you going for a bigger win or smaller?
I'll leave the predictions to Morris here, but I'd love to see Bursley win. I'm not going to back against them because I want to cheer them on. Yeah, I never thought I'd say this about a Tipperary too, yeah. team, lads, but it's the truth. But at the same time, like, I remember watching last year's All-Ireland final, wondering about this Ballyhale team, and then just seeing them and just thinking they were just exquisite, like, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've actually seen them play 60 minutes since, so it's almost on that memory alone, it's very hard to back against them, you know.
The football then, literally almost the exact same conversation mentioned. Like, I watch Kilku and I'm like, geez, these lads, I tell you, are going to be a match for anyone. Like, you watch them and you get sucked in to thinking, I'm really convinced myself, geez, you know, I think they could beat Cora Finn. But then, like, reading Joe Brawley's piece in the Sunday Independent about Cora Finn, and you're like, oh, wait, no, Cora Finn are absolutely class. What am I saying? And I don't know. It's one of those things where you'll see every team outside of, as in, before they play Cora Finn, they're one thing. And then when they go up against them, it's really hard to, especially at club level, where it's like, it's kind of apples and oranges because you're not going to pass form or they haven't played each other before or whatever it is. So this is difficult. But I do think Kilku are brilliant to watch. They're completely different. It's different styles, really. Like, they're real shorthand passing, running in packs, hunting in packs, going together. But you can't say that it's just pure blanket defence.
No.
And hopefully it's almost like Tyrone in 03,
or McGinnis Donegal nearly.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, like the Kerry, the club teams just don't know what they're coming up against. All of a sudden, Kilku are just around them. There seems to be like 15 black jerseys just running around the place, and the ball is barely in anyone's hand before it's moved on again.
Yeah, like, and this is why it's kind of relates to the conversation we had earlier. The only reason that I was kind of hesitant about Kilku is that, do you remember the amount of times where you'd see, like, Basquiat kick a ball short and from that Kilku would launch a brilliant attack, or a kick out would go long out on midfield and they were looking for, like, at whoever it was to come and clear the ball, and Branning would come drive with his fists, pumps the ball forward, and they break forward and they can do that. Like, Cara Finn's kick outs with power are perfect. Like, they're totally on the money. They're these really intelligent, coordinated drills. This, in the last All-Ireland final, is when we saw power, the flick in hand, that it's up on Boz, analysis of this, but he's using his hands to direct players to create space. Like, these are set moves that are really kind of intelligent and well-crafted. So their use of possession won't allow that to Kilku, what we saw in those situations. So suddenly they've kind of, like, forged themselves. Now, maybe they will be able to hunt them down, but you mentioned the Joe Brawley piece, like, that bit of in-game intelligence. When a team, if a team wants to set back ahead of, like, that's what you kind of need to do. You kind of need to press Cara Finn. Like, if you set back in front of them, they're the most patient team in the world. They've got so many players who are capable of kicking from long. If it's, like, Ronan Stead, Farraher, Ian Burke, Michael Lundy, they're all really good long-range shooters, or they're really intelligent the way that they build and pull a team out. So, I do kind of feel like that. I agree what you're saying about Kilku's tactics, but it's still reactive. Like, it still is kind of dependent on being provided something by the opposition. I don't know if Cara Finn will do that.
The Brawley piece, if anyone hasn't read it, it's about, like, just looking at some of the tactical ingenuity from Cara Finn, where they're faced against a blank defence and they're trying to suck the whole defence to one side of the pitch, or both the
just ways of orchestrating space,
forwards, running to one corner of the pitch from the start of the game against Nemo Rangers, and then instinctively Lundy knowing Burke, I can't remember which way around it was, was inside him, like, for the pass. But then, like, Kilku, one thing that they kind of rely on is that people aren't comfortable on the ball as you'd like to think, that when you put them under that kind of pressure, that they don't have the, I don't call it natural skill, but that just comfortableness on the ball to hold on to it in that kind of situation, which Cara Finn are going to have.
Yeah.
They've got, of any team, they're going to be a team that's going to be able to counteract
that. That's it,
Jay.
You can't, like, you made the best point earlier, which is, like, you almost can't judge a team until they come up against Cara Finn, like, you know, because they're such a class apart. Like, so watching them, like, against Nemo, the way they kind of just were so expert in the way they were just handing, like, off, it was like, oh, we let you within 4 points, like, you know, but then as soon as you do, we'll come on. And it's like someone like Ian Burke, like, barely kicks a ball in the first half, and then it's like comes out in the second half. It was like, ah, lads, nuts to this, like, do you know what I mean? And it's just like, he has an outstanding second half performance, and I just think they've got too many of those lads. You mentioned most of them, Morris, like, you know, what I mean? They've too many of those guys that can just change a club game on their own, like. And you have to wonder, as, like, tactics will come into it and all the things that Kilku do really well, but eventually quality is going to show, because Cara Finn have all these tactical geniuses and genius plays and stuff like that. So the team with the much higher quality footballers are the team that are surely going to come out on top. We're also probably talking about the best club team
Well, that's a really interesting narrative, this game, because if Carfin do win it, they kind of consolidate that mantle as the best club. And I kind of do think that they are. If you want to talk about matchups as well, like for all those, we went through those kind of silky fours already, but you've got like a warrior like Kieran Fitzgerald at the back. And if you've got one man who's going to go blow for blow with Laverty, it's Fitzgerald. Like, he was standing there with him. And Fitzgerald could still play into county football, lads. Like, if he had two nippy corner backs ahead of him and you wanted him as a full back, which Galway right now are playing Gary O'Donnell in that role, Fitzgerald could definitely job.
He could do it, but I hope you're not here calling for a 38-year-old to be recalled to the Galway team.
On the idea of the skill set, PJ has done a good piece actually with speaking of Kieran Fitzgerald. You can see it up in balls.ie as well, about how Carfin developed these footballers that are so good under skill, about a lot of their training is 7-a-side games, so they've like really maximised the amount of ball. Like, if you play a 15-a-side game, your corner forwards, cornerbacks, wing backs, they might touch the ball 10 to 15 times. If you play 7-a-side games, they might get 40 to 50 touches, so that'll just naturally increase it. Things like developing two-footed and all that kind of stuff, like, they're really big on that side of the game. And that's why, like, you're talking about Kilcoo, ultimately what Kilcoo do is, like, they want to pressure your skills, get into you making mistakes. Carfin don't make those mistakes. Like, they don't have that element to them. They haven't shown it otherwise. So, to my mind, if Carfin are going to lose this game, it's because they've underperformed. Like, if their mean is just such that I don't see anybody else getting near them.
Yeah.
Have you seen that in them in the last, say, 2 years? Have you seen a performance that said, Jesus, if they met the wrong team this year, they'd be caught. This week, they'd be caught.
The first day, so the last two county finals, Carfin drew and went to replays. And so a lot of people would argue, oh, well, they're actually priming when they peak. Mm. Now, I don't actually think that is the case. Like, I think that particularly last year against Montbellu, they really struggled to break down a team. But what was great was how they reacted after. So the first day, I think it was like 7 points all. They really struggled to break down a team. And come back to a replay, Bernard Power is coming out of his goals. They're using him to create an overlap up the pitch. So you got a keeper coming out kind of force. So if you've got a blank in defence, you kind of carry that overlap all the way up. Like, they're really intelligent in the ways that they react to teams. So they, like, now the thing is that they'll be caught in a hop. There is also the factor, Carfin know Croke Park, every inch and blade of the place. We're in there already during the week. You want to talk about squads, like, we're led to believe Carfin might as many as 10 players in with the Galway team as well this year. Like, there, so you've got the standard 15 that are always there at 6-4s, but then you've got subs who are good enough to play inter-county football as well. So, like, as a unit, I just think that Carfin are, I think Carfin are a class apart. That might be biased on looking at it from a Galway perspective, but I also do think they're the best club team that we're going to see, and this is their kind of chance to consolidate that.
Mick, can you guess the handicap?
I'd say it's high enough. 6.
6. Morris, what are you going for?
I don't think it's 7, so I'll say 5.
Oh, Morris wins again. 5. It's Carfin minus 4 as well. So okay. About 4. Ooh. So
that's right on the
closest to it.
Edge of being tempting.
Isn't it? Like, I'm still looking at that going, I even always said about a good curve in arms, like, Kilcoo though, it could be like it is kind of like the old, was it the 08 final of, or 09, 08 of Kerry and Tyrone, where you had kind of like Kerry the aristocrats, and then just, oh Jesus, what have we let ourselves in for here?
Yeah.
Was it 05 or 08?
No, it was 08. They beat them in 03 semi-final, 05 final, and the 08 final.
Yeah.
The 08 final was when there was a team that were kind of sort of thought of as overlooked, and they all grew the beards and they came back and caught Kerry on the hop in the final. But the other thing was, they had beaten this team twice. There was a monkey on their back, and definitely Currafin don't have that, you know. But that was Kerry team going for 3-3
semi-final even as well. Yeah.
Maybe that is the case, but like, we were hearing about Nemo being the best Munster club and finally being able to put it up to Currafin, and they didn't lay a glove on them. Like, Ballantubber gunning for Currafin after what they did to him 2 years ago, didn't lay a glove on them. I think that they're,
are they getting better?
I'm posing that question, but lucky enough, I'm in the presenter seat, not the prediction seat. So it's up to you, Morris. What are you predicting here?
I'll go for Carfin. I think will win, and
they'll beat that spread.
I think they might too. Yeah,
beat the spread. So Carfin to beat the spread, not bad going there. You can get it at evens on ladbrokes.com. Before we go as well, we've got the junior and intermediate All Ireland hurling finals as well this weekend.
Yeah,
some great stories there, especially with Tullerone and Tommy Walsh. There's a brilliant interview with the Walshes up on balls.ie right now. PJ was talking to, I think it was Porrick last week.
Yeah, Tullerone are an interesting case study. They're a brilliant story, actually. People would have seen the Tommy Walsh celebrant with his father, which was just, like, it was absolutely class. It kind of summarised what you kind of love about Club GAA. That interview was great, by the way, that they go into that, and Park is slagging his father, making a beeline
straight
for us.
To Tommy.
which was great.
It's actually great. Got it here up, and it's like Patrick's like, I didn't get near him, says Walsh of his father. We've been slagging him about it since. You never come near the rest of us, and he feels awful now. He says, he was the closest one to me, but he's absolutely over the moon. He was on the sideline beside Tommy at the time. It was so nice to see the two of them, and the video of them after was cool, which is in the piece as well. If you haven't seen it, I'm sure you have at this stage, of Tommy and his father embracing each other.
I'd be interested in the price for that game, just briefly, because Cork, from following news from Cork, were heavily backboned to the Immaculate team, who were brilliant. But the two players sent off, they played Tyrone from Mayo in a semi-final, but run close by Tyrone actually in a semi-final, and Billy Dunn and Mark O'Keefe were both sent off, and it looks like their appeals are going to be upheld, so they won't give it off, and that's two big players to be missing in a final. So even if you're going off their form from the year they have been so far this year, I think that is that's a huge loss. They missed two starters in a
Tullerone are 8-13 and Ladbrokes Father Neil's are 13-8.
Yeah, that's, I think, yeah, I it could even be shorter really for Tullerone, given like you're talking about two big players missing for in a All-Ireland final. I just,
yeah,
it's still dangerous for Dublin pedestrians.
So this is, I'm never going to get tired of that sting. This is our charity bet that we're starting this week with Ladbrokes, where they've given us €10. We're going to try to build it up every week to €1,000 on bets that are between 1-5 and 1-2 on Ladbrokes.com. So we're going for sure things, but there's no such thing as a sure thing when myself and Mick are involved. So Maurice, what we're going to do is we're going to enlist the help of the Balls.ie readers and the podcast listeners by putting it up on site for a couple of days. People will have an opportunity to vote, and then come the weekend we'll put the tenner on whatever wins the public
choose between mine and Mark's pick. So
exactly.
Yeah.
So we've had one each right this week. Mick is his first one. Mick, what is your pick?
Well, we've talked about it a lot, so we don't need to go into it too much, but I have picked Cora Finn to win the All-Ireland at 2-7.
And I'm going for Celtic to beat Kilmarnock away from home in the Ladbrokes Premiership at 3-10. So mine returns €13, as in altogether, obviously. And Mick's returns slightly less, €12.85. What one tickles your fancy there off the bat?
I think Celtic, a more sure thing.
I don't
away
know.
From home.
It's up to the readers and listeners to decide.
Yeah. If you were voting right now on Balls.ie.
I think I'd vote for Cara Finn, but I just think if I see Cara Finn anywhere, I'm going to click on it. That it's
hopefully there's virus, fisher, scammers, whatever they call them, listed tomorrow. So pop it up on your phone. No. I just keep seeing Cara Finn buttons everywhere. But that will be up on site. Be sure to check it out and vote.
We're going to win €1,000 for charity.
Yeah, you can help us win €1,000 for charity.
I think we'll do it, Mark.
And before we go, we've just got a short bit of time left to chat about the NFL. I was setting you up for it.
Yeah, but you pointed at me at the wrong time.
I said the NFL.
Playoffs?
There we go.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?
Yes, NFL picks. It's the NFL semi-finals, as I like to call them, Morris. Mick's given me a lot of abuse about this in the podcast already. Chiefs against Titans, 49ers against Packers. You are one lucky sod. Well, I don't know if I call you a lucky sod, but you were a picture of disappointment at halftime in the Chiefs game last week.
The first quarter.
The cat that got the cream.
Tweeting out gifs of man walking into water and not emerging.
It was weird. It was really weird. Like, I watched this game by myself because I was at home, and I don't know what it was, like this agonizing noise after the first touchdown. I was like, oh, this is bad. And then they had a punt blocked down and the Texans scored off that. And I'm like, this noise has never come out of me before. It was kind of like an agonizing scream. I was like looking at the screen, like, ah, like, it's like, just couldn't understand what I was doing. And for the rest, I was just walking around my house and I was like looking at my phone, this is a disaster. I didn't understand why I was so down. And then on top of that, three different people, including Mick, send me different narrations there. Listen, are you okay? Like, get a text after because it's going so badly. It was like, I was like, this just always happens. It's like, why do I support the Chiefs? Like, this always, and I was like, getting really, really angry about it.
Just if people weren't paying attention, the score 24-0 to the Chiefs and Texans, enough to win most games.
Yeah, yeah.
And then what happened?
Then. So it was actually, it was nuts, right?
Can I just tell it from my point of view as well? Because what happened to me was that for some reason I'd missed the start. And I had got started watching at 21-0. And the Texans were on a drive and Roman was like, the Chiefs have to turn them over here. They have to stop them. They have to stop. They can't let them get another score. And then they, all right, albeit they didn't get another touchdown, but they got a field goal. So put them up 24-0. It was kind of like game over. Now that happened exactly at 8:59. And this is what I'm going to describe now as what's happening for the next few weeks is the Sunday night wars in a lot of households, where you've got the NFL competing with the new winter season of Love Island, which is also competing already with the very formidable opponent of Room to Improve. So there are a lot
That's over now anyway.
Yeah, there were a lot of problems for people who wanted to watch the NFL. I was like, look at Schluck, it's 9 o'clock, the 24-0 down. This game's over. I'm gonna switch it off. Grand, go watch Love Island. I wasn't watching Love Island, but I give up the television. And then at 10 o'clock I turn it on. And it's also still not worth watching, but for a completely different reason.
Yeah. I can't believe you had the misfortune of that happening. Like, live, it was the... I think it was the most enjoyable football that I've ever experienced watching, like, as live sport. It was absolutely incredible. And it was incredible for a couple of different reasons. Like, you mentioned the field goal there. That was nuts. Like, they were 4th and 1. Bill O'Brien, for all the world, looked like he was going to go for it. Then called a timeout. They went back, decided he was going to kick a field goal. I don't know why. Like, if you have your foot in the throat,
they didn't get the team on the pitch quick enough.
And it was bizarre, right?
But even the second time, they still could have went for it. They didn't put the foot in the throat. But like, that is all. I actually was a bit 50-50 on it. I think at this stage, 24-0, you're putting points at the board every time you're down there, and the Chiefs are offering nothing. But it is obviously, in retrospect, a mistake. Like, but.
And then to follow it up, well, in isolation it might not be a mistake, but then to follow up with the fake punt that Chiefs ended up chopping down, and they
I forgot about that, when I was going through everything that happened with you the other morning, Mark.
It was bizarre. It was just too total in isolation. Two moves, which kind of makes sense, but the fact that he did them in the same game is just really bizarre. And then on top of that, you've got Patrick Mahomes, who is the best entertainer in live sport when he's on the money. Like, he is absolutely incredible in a freakish way. Like, he is kind of like all consuming. You know, Mahomes wouldn't have been known for running the ball, but when he had to scramble at the weekend, he was great.
Yeah.
If he has to go, if you're 3rd and 8 and you need like this sidestep, like a sidearm, like, hit a tight end, Travis Kelce, and just get it done. He'll get it done. If you need a deep ball threat and Tyreek Hill is flying down, even though for the first quarter they could not catch anything, and he's still just throwing bomb after bomb. Yeah. Like,
no one was getting near him, though.
No, they weren't, but that's part of the game as well, was that they were protecting him pretty well. Three quick things I want to say about this. One was, like, to Morris's point, was Mahomes having that kind of game in the playoffs, even though he's played well in the playoffs, that's a massive deal for like the future of who's going to be the face of the NFL or the face of even American football around the world going forward, because that's a signature performance of him now. That's going to be the one that's going to take the mantle back off Lamar Jackson. The playoffs are all ahead of him. You can't back against him going to lead this team to the Super Bowl now, you know, having done what he did. By the way, just so people don't know, that was 24-0. The score ended up being 51-31 to the Chiefs, and that flattered the Texans. It was just an incredible turnaround. Four touchdowns in one quarter, in the second quarter, that is what they got to turn around the game. It was basically over at halftime.
Arrowhead ran out of fireworks for celebratory fireworks after every touchdown, and they put up a sign midway through the third quarter that we actually have no fireworks left. It got to the stage where there was an offensive lineman, Eric Fisher, who was chugging beers midway through the fourth quarter. He went over and did the Stone Cold Steve Austin celebration.
That was very funny. The other thing I wanted to say was that I was watching this, Mark. Like, everybody has their own story. Morris was like, you know, devastated to exhilarated. You were fighting about Love Island, and I'm watching it going, I changed my mind after the podcast and went for the Titans. To at least cover the spread against the Ravens. We're going to talk about the Titans in a few minutes. And it was like, I was so happy with myself because I just called and I just thought about it more. And it was like, it wasn't just picking a team. I knew the 49ers were going to beat the spread. I actually, by the time it happened, knew the Titans would beat the spread. And I called that the Texans would beat the spread and that it could be possibly an upset. And they're 24-0 up after like 17 minutes. And I'm sitting there going, I am a fucking genius. And I'm going to win an accumulator. And then it all went haywire. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, nothing ever works out for me. And this is on the same day that my football team gets beaten 6-1. And God only knows what else was going on in sport.
Munster were
beaten. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
This weekend, look, we play against the handicap game. We do it for the GA. We do it for the American football. It's Chiefs against Titans. Make it let you go first.
I heard this handicap on Monday and said, if Mark does this now, I have to not make sure that I'm not playing this game and pretend that I know. I can't remember. actually having the breeze. Like,
I'm in the same boat, yeah.
Is it 7.5?
Mars?
Chiefs minus 7.
Lower?
No, it's lower than that. 6.
No, you said 7.
I said 7.5, actually. Come on.
I'd say lower. I'd say 6.
It's 7.
Is it?
Oh, so I'm closer.
You could have gotten away with that.
The Titans, we'll move off this game. We'll talk about the NFC game. We don't have to talk all day about the Titans. They shocked the Baltimore Ravens, went in there and absolutely destroyed them. And they did it in, like, this guy, Derrick Henry. We mentioned him on the show last week. There's nobody ever had put back performances like this back-to-back in playoffs before, where he's running for 200 yards. He's just booming up the middle. You can't take him down. You're needing 2-3 guys. Like, he's just such a big man running right at you. He even threw for a touchdown. A beautiful little
jump pass.
Like a kind of a basketball style jump pass on a fake run. They're exhilarating. I love this team. They're so likable. They've got likable coaches, likable players. They've got a redemption story in Tannehill. They've got a superstar in Henry. Don't rule them out this week. That's all I'm going to say. I've obviously already talked about this in the big shout. I didn't really go into too much detail, but like, I do think the Chiefs will win the game. But +7, this team aren't easily beaten, and they've shown it enough. And we could be in for a classic game. Like, just don't sleep on them. It's going to be a great game. It's a weird game. It's too low, like, not really famous teams. But that doesn't mean it's not going to be brilliant, you know? Yeah.
My only betting advice in this game is follow the white suit. So if you saw Derrick Henry walked up in a white trench coat, a white turtleneck, white pants, and
very
white shoes.
FA Cup final.
And no, that's...
Classier, though.
That's bullshit.
Jesus, Morris.
If you're going all white, I need like full commitment. Black shoes don't work. I don't like blue shirts. I don't want red. If you're going to go, I want outfit. I can't get out of bed in this outfit without getting it dirty. Like, this is, it's white down to the last. Only two players turned up in all white this weekend in the NFL. From my Twitter experience, only two players turned up. One was Derrick Henry, the entire white as I just described. The other was Travis Kelce. Both of them were the players of the weekend. Follow the white suit. Whoever turns up in a white suit this weekend will win.
Is that why you're wearing a white t-shirt here in the podcast? No,
exactly.
Follow
the
man in the white t-shirt. 49ers against Packers. He's doing gang signs here over the corner. 49ers against Packers.
It was your man in the red shirt.
Not red shirt. The green and white shirt.
Green and white shirt, sorry. I got very
confused. Of course, Celtic. People have no idea what
we're
talking about here.
That's a niche joke now. Yeah.
There's nothing unusual about that there, Mark.
49ers against Packers. Someone tell me something about it.
Interesting narratives out of this game as well. Like, again, it's this kind of quarterback idea. I just want this game just to go away. Like, get the... let's set up the 49ers-Chiefs final and let's everybody else just play a game.
I'm devastated that this game's on a 11:30 because I think this could be brilliant. This is the opposite of what I was saying about Kansas City and Tennessee being kind of like two kind of non-famous games. These are like the NFC's, like, two of their most 3 or 4 famous franchises going up against each other, two like legendary clubs who kind of haven't been, like, you know, Aaron Rodgers has only won one Super Bowl and only been in one Super Bowl. That's amazing. He hasn't played in a Super Bowl since like the 2010 season, 2011. That's 9 years ago, February 2011, since Aaron Rodgers played in the Super Bowl. The 49ers haven't won one since 1994, I think, maybe again, February 95. They were in one a few years ago when the lights went out against, and they lost to Baltimore. This is just... But also, it's a team in Green Bay who have a new coach and have changed their identity around a little bit this season and have been under the radar good. They've won 14 games and lost 3 now.
Yeah.
And nobody's paid any attention to them. And suddenly they're in what Mark calls the All-America semifinals, you know, against the Niners. I still don't know what to expect from them, but I really do like this Niners team. And it was actually watching them for a full 60 minutes on Saturday, as opposed to kind of on Red Zone or on highlights or just for a quarter here and there, is like, this is a team that has something everywhere. It has like above average or highly above average player in every single position on the field. All 22 of the defense and offense are brilliant, you know, or very good. And not any other team, I don't think, can offer that.
It's just a happy marriage. Like, they got very lucky that Bosa dropped in the draft last year because of Kyler Murray going first. D Ford was bummed out of Kansas City because we mentioned this last week. He absolutely destroyed us against the Pats at the end of the game.
I think that's why he was bummed out of Kansas City.
It was also to clear
as a free agent.
Yeah, and there was also a salary cap issue as well. Even Jimmy G last week was... this guy kind of goes back to... I think you liked him more than I did initially. Yeah. And he threw that pick and I was rubbing my hands like I was right. And then it was more so kind of his reaction after that pick was kind of class. Like he just... kind of brushed it off. He is the personification of cool, really. Like
wins games, Mars. That's what Jimmy G does, you know. Jimmy Garoppolo, he has a very, very, very good record as of winning football games.
You know what he has? Bogey McFarland's favorite word. He has poise.
His poise. His chutzpah as well.
Guile.
Yeah. I like the 49ers.
I like the 49ers as well, yeah.
I think the 49ers Chiefs would be a crazy good Super Bowl. I'd love to see that. I think technically Packers Chief would draw a bigger audience share, apparently I read during the week, but just purely from a matchup perspective.
Chief was the first ever Super Bowl, and this is the 100th year of the NFL.
I'm going to ask you, Morris, can you guess the spread, given that I initially forgot that it's Mick lower. Had mentioned both the spreads in his big shout earlier on and I'd somehow forgotten them.
It's lower.
I didn't mention the 49ers spread, Mark. I only had the 49ers to win in my big shout.
It's lower. It's, I'd say it is is it 4.5?
Nope, it's 7.5.
Is it?
Yep.
That's big. The Packers against the Seahawks was a really interesting game because Russell Wilson, the Seahawks quarterback, was insane. Like he was crazy good. No, he's kind of working on isolation that he just doesn't have enough options. But you didn't really get a sense until the very end that the Packers were ever in trouble. Like it was weird.
Yeah. Technically, the 49ers seem like they're a way better team than the Seahawks, but like the Seahawks, you could fancy them to beat anybody, including the 49ers, who they did beat earlier this year and were very unlucky not to beat a second time. So, I don't know. Like it's so exciting. It's a real pity this is the second game.
It's great to see
unless, like Morris, you're a Chiefs fan or whatever, like understandably, of course, you want to watch your team at a reasonable hour. But for the neutrals, and it's unusual that I'm a neutral on conference weekend that the Patriots aren't around, I would love the NFC game to be on at the reasonable half eight time, because we've all got work on Monday morning, lads.
I'm telling you, there could be a few groggy eyes coming in to work Monday morning around Ireland if they stay up for that game, but hopefully they're rewarded.
A lot of 49ers fans
definitely, and Packers. As you're saying, if you mentioned it to someone who doesn't follow the NFL every week, you'd be like, Jesus, that 49ers-Packers game sounds like a huge match. Yeah.
Van Nicklin, the big Packers fan.
Yeah.
Her and the whole family were over there for a game a couple of weeks ago.
That is it. We have.
So you're Ireland's biggest Chiefs fan, are you?
See, what normally happens is it's like...
6 foot four.
Go on J1s.
Bit like a second row.
It's lads who go on J1s or like that end up following a team. Like, so that's why the Chargers is a load of people's favourite team, because they were used to be in San Diego to 49ers in a similar boat. Nobody goes to Kansas City.
Except for Morris.
Except for me.
I only discovered last week, we were talking off air, that Kansas City's in Missouri.
He's in Missouri, yeah.
That's ridiculous.
It's very close to Kansas.
Still, though.
Someone that's even in Kansas.
That's no excuse, quite frankly. The fact that it's in Missouri.
Yeah, Missouri don't have a team, so we have... They used to have two. They're the Midwest team. They're America's team.
St. Louis were there up until a couple of years ago before they bombed off to LA.
Everybody moving everywhere. Look, we're going to hopefully be back here next week. We're not going to be in Cork or Galway or anywhere else. Thank you very much, everybody, for listening. If you are having any bets on sport this weekend, be sure to gamble responsibly. You can visit dunlewy.net for more information. If you've yet to subscribe to the podcast, search The Build Up on balls.ie on all good podcast apps. You can find us there. Leave us a rating and a review as well, please. Until we chat to you next week, though, mind yourself.